Hello and welcome, everybody. Israeli forces have launched a new wave of raids across the occupied West Bank, with the northern city of Tubas being the focal point of such incursions. Heavy military reinforcements and bulldozers were deployed to the city, with several civilian homes converted into military outposts and residents forcibly displaced. The regime's troops also stormed a camp located in southern Al-Khalil, arresting more Palestinians during overnight incursions. Further raids were also reported in Jenin and Nablus. The Islamic Jihad resistance movement has condemned Israeli raids, calling them systematic aggression against Palestinians. The movement warned the attacks coincide with Knesset efforts to advance annexation laws, including measures allowing settlers to seize Palestinian lands. Our West Bank correspondent Nara Hamed was earlier with us to talk more about Israel's intensified raids across the occupied territories.
Since the hours of the morning, large numbers of military vehicles and soldiers have made their way, made an incursion today to Tubas from every entrance of that city. The Israeli aircraft, the Israeli military aircraft, also joined the ongoing, or the military on the ground, the military vehicles on the ground, the air, they were participating and still is participating in this military operation. According to local resources, according to Tamun municipality, the head of the municipality, Samir Bsharat, the air forces have fired ammunition and many rockets upon the Palestinians and the residential buildings. More than 10 residential buildings have been turned into military outposts. And until now, reports about two arrests from inside Tubas. The ambulance is banned from entering the province, and as local resources have informed, that large numbers of vehicles and heavy machinery have been seen entering towards the city of Tul Kerem. Another attack in Al Arub refugee camp to the north of occupied Al Khalil is still going on.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has said that Israel is pursuing a clear policy to seize more Palestinian land in the West Bank through the systematic crimes. That's breaking news that you're getting on the bottom of your screen. And also, the Israeli regime continues to breach the Gaza ceasefire agreement with Hamas. Quadcopter drones have dropped grenades on eastern Gaza City, while warplanes carried out airstrikes on Khan Yunis. Now, so the Palestinian NGO network has sounded a serious alarm over the catastrophic humanitarian situation in Gaza as winter approaches. The network called on the international community to declare the territory a, quote, humanitarian disaster area. The warning came as the Palestinians in Gaza complain about their desperate situation due to Israeli blockade of aid supplies despite the ceasefire.
All night we couldn't sleep or do anything. We were just holding mops and worn-out tents with water coming in from every direction. Children are drowning, drenched in water, and we're practically swimming. This suffering, this rain, and the weather depressions haven't even started yet. It's only the beginning of winter, and we're already flooded. We haven't received tents or tarps. The tarp and the tent are 2 years old. They're completely worn out, and we're drowning.
The network also called for urgent global measures to ensure the protection of civilians in Gaza and lift the territory's blockade. It stressed that rescue efforts are necessary for thousands of displaced people whose tents and shelters have been swept away by torrential rains and floods. The network also called for urgent delivery of tents and supplies needed to rehabilitate shelters, along with the immediate provision of relief and food aid. It noted that Gaza's civil defense teams and the health sector must be activated, and Israeli restrictions on the entry of essential goods must end. The network added that according to the latest international reports, more than 90% of Gaza's population suffers from malnutrition due to severe food shortages and scarcity of potable water amid ongoing Israeli bombardments and daily military strikes. Political analyst Sarah Flounders believes that Trump's peace plan for Gaza is a complete fraud, and Washington is actually a guarantor of the ongoing genocide in the war-torn territory.
In my opinion, what this means is that the U.S., as the guarantor of this grand peace plan. This peace plan ran through even the UN Security Council. They are the guarantors of a humanitarian disaster, of a continuing genocide. It's a complete fraud, and yet they signed on and said they would guarantee that these supplies would be released, that there would be food, that there would be shelter, the most basic shelter. We're talking about tarps and tents in wintertime. We're talking about basic nutritious food, and yet none of that is being provided. It's being provided in levels so scarce, so tiny, that 90% of the population is still suffering serious malnutrition. Now, this is a real disaster. And we got to say that for the countries that guaranteed this agreement, that they are also responsible, along with the Zionists, along with this Israeli blockade.
Well, a new poll indicates that over 80% of Germans oppose their government's military support for Israel. The survey also found that nearly three-quarters of respondents want Berlin to apply stronger diplomatic pressure on Israel. The survey shows a major shift in public opinion, with 60% rejecting the traditional stance that Germany has special responsibility towards Israel. The poll also reflects a widening gap between government policy and public sentiment. Berlin supplied Israel with arms worth more than 490 million euros from October 7, 2023 to June 5, 2025. Amid rising public pressure, Germany in August imposed restrictions on weapons sales to the Tel Aviv regime as the ammunition could be used in the genocidal war on Gaza. However, Berlin lifted the restrictions this week. The United Nations says despite the conclusion of the ceasefire agreement between Israel and Lebanon, the regime has intensified its attacks on the Arab country, killing scores of civilians. According to the UN Human Rights Office, at least 127 civilians have been killed in Lebanon since the ceasefire deal entered into force about a year ago. In one of the deadliest attacks last week, over a dozen civilians, mostly children, were killed in the Ain al-Helwa camp for Palestinian refugees in southern Lebanon. The office added that there are serious concerns that Israel's attack on the Ain al-Helwa camp may have violated international humanitarian law. It called for prompt and impartial investigation into the regime's strike. The UN Humanitarian Office added that Israel's attacks on Lebanon have also destroyed civilian infrastructure and hampered reconstruction efforts and attempts by internally displaced people to go back home. It said over 64,000 people, mostly residents of southern Lebanon, remain displaced in other parts of the country. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi is set to arrive in Paris later on Wednesday. The trip is at the invitation of his French counterpart, Jean-Noël Barrot. According to the Iranian Foreign Ministry, bilateral issues as well as regional and international issues are on the agenda of the talks. The ministry says the Islamic Republic uses any opportunity to declare the country's positions regarding different issues, including its peaceful nuclear program. The top Iranian diplomat is also expected to talk about the case of an Iranian citizen, Mahdi Esfandiari, who was arrested earlier this year over anti-Israel social media posts. Araghchi's trip to Paris comes after he concluded a trip to The Hague, where he attended the 30th session of the conference of the state parties to the Chemical Weapons Convention. Also, Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi has condemned the U.S.'s bullying toward Venezuela and other independent countries in the Western Hemisphere. Araghchi issued the condemnation in a phone call with his Venezuelan counterpart, Ivan Gil Pinto. The top Iranian diplomat said threatening to use force against Venezuela amounts to gross violations of the UN Charter and international law. Araghchi also called on the international community to take action in the face of hostile unilateralism by the U.S. The Venezuelan foreign minister, for his part, reaffirmed Caracas's determination to resist U.S. pressure and illegal interference in the country's affairs. Meanwhile, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has vowed to defend his country against any imperialist threat, urging unity among civilians, politicians, and armed forces.
Bolívar pudo construir tell our people, if Bolivar could build 7 Army Corps to liberate all of South America and secure the independence of Central America and beyond, we must be able to defend every inch of this blessed land from any imperialist threat or aggression, wherever and whenever it comes. Stay alert, stay alert.
Maduro made the remarks during a civic military march in Caracas. The rally was held as tensions have been on the rise between Caracas and Washington since the U.S. military began strikes on alleged drug trafficking boats in the Caribbean. The U.S. State Department has designated the Cartel de los Sols a foreign terrorist organization. That's a group allegedly headed by Maduro. The Venezuelan Foreign Ministry described the designation as a ridiculous fabrication. Meanwhile, Caracas has warned international airlines to resume flights to the Latin American country within 48 hours or risk being stripped of their clearance to fly there altogether. It came after several airlines suspended their flights to Venezuela following a Friday warning by the U.S. aviation regulator about heightened military activity in the area. Brazil's Supreme Court has ordered former President Jair Bolsonaro to begin serving his 27-year prison sentence as his conviction for plotting a coup. The far-right politician was convicted in September after the Supreme Court ruled he orchestrated a criminal conspiracy to block his left-wing rival Lula da Silva from taking office. Investigators say the plot included plans to assassinate Lula and his running mate. The conspiracy, however, failed to get the backing of the Army and Air Force commanders. Bolsonaro and his 6 allies were later found guilty of attempting to, quote, annihilate Brazilian democracy and restore dictatorship. He has been under house arrest since August. Democratic lawmakers who appeared in a social media video calling on U.S. troops to defy illegal orders say the FBI has contacted them to begin scheduling interviews. Let's now listen to one of those 6 lawmakers, Michigan Senator Elisa Slotkin.
The counterterrorism division at the FBI sent a note to members of Congress saying they are opening what appears to be an inquiry against the 6 of us. To be honest, the president's reaction and the use of the FBI against us is exactly why we made the video. He believes in using the federal government against his perceived adversaries.
Slotkin revealed the inquiry has coincided with a surge in threats, including a bomb scare at her farm. She added that she and 5 other lawmakers are receiving round-the-clock protection from Capitol Police after her family's safety was disrupted. The 90-second video warned that the Trump administration was pitting uniformed military against American citizens. Trump responded by accusing them of sedition and demanding their arrest. Hundreds of protesters have gathered outside the prime minister's office in the Japanese capital. They condemned Sanae Takaichi's recent comments about Taiwan that sparked tensions between Beijing and Tokyo.
Making such reckless remarks and even calling to double defense spending is basically preparing for war, whatever she says. As citizens, we must oppose this. Friendship between Japan and China is crucial. Japan's army once invaded China and caused tremendous suffering. That is a historical fact. We should build a truly friendly relationship with China by showing sincere remorse.
After Japan's defeat in World War II, we adopted Article 9 of the Constitution. Now the government is trying to dismantle that pacifist principle, and we will never allow it. For the people of Asia, this means Japan is obscuring its wartime responsibility and once again setting out on the path to war. That is completely wrong.
The protesters accused Takaichi of steering Japan toward war. Many carried placards calling on the premier to withdraw her words and stop inciting conflict. Meanwhile, recent diplomatic tensions have led to a substantial decline in Chinese tourism to Japan, with an increase in flight cancellations compared to the previous week. In the Japanese city of Okinawa, local businesses say the economic impact is already being felt.
We usually see a lot of Chinese tourists when ferries and cruise ships dock in Okinawa. Back when those ships came regularly, many of the visitors would stop at our shop first. But lately, some cruises have turned back or had their schedules canceled, and compared to before, we're definitely seeing fewer customers.
Normally, this time through next month should be a busy season, but I'm not sure how things will go. I'll be watching closely to see how customer traffic develops.
Many local seafood vendors say the conflict between Japan and China could put their livelihoods at risk. They worry that when political tensions rise, the economy is the first to feel the shock. They say they are aware that their livelihoods are tied to both peace and stability. On November 7, 2025, the Japanese Prime Minister said her country could respond with its own self-defense force if China attacked Taiwan. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Things that I've said, no, they don't mean nothing at all. Time just flies by when I'm with the one I love. Even sunlight makes it through the dark in a cold, misty sky. Us now, still haven't made a sound. Some folks are dying to live, and others live to die. But somehow, when I think of you, I smile deep inside. No matter what the world brings, and even if the birds won't sing, better times are on their way, cause I know you're there. And even if the sun won't smile, it's been a while since I felt any light, but I know you're there. The grass was greener on the other side. The world just gray now, but we out of time. And when I lie alone and stare into the dark, I remember what you said, I watched you start.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with Reporters.
Thanks to Trump, European Commission insiders say an atmosphere of fear and uncertainty continues to hang over EU-US trade relations. Meeting on Monday, EU trade ministers agreed the bloc must broaden its commercial horizons and seek additional stable partners.
What we are working on continuously, that we have to diversify our trade. The commissioner gave us a state on ongoing negotiations with India and a number of other countries and regions in Asia, Middle East and Africa.
It emerged at Monday's meeting, attended by senior White House officials, that the EU has already paid €173 billion for US energy imports this year, much of it for costly liquefied natural gas shipped across the Atlantic. Those charges filter through industry and ultimately onto consumers. It's a stark contrast to the much cheaper Russian gas that once powered the EU. The head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, struck a deal with Trump at his golf course in Scotland last July. He had been threatening 50% US tariffs on all EU imports, but in the end they settled on a baseline 15% levy. Now Washington officials are annoyed at the EU over its slow implementation of that deal. Punishing 50% US tariffs on EU steel and aluminium remain firmly in place. The current trade arrangements have drawn sharp criticism from inside the European Parliament.
Trump is the worst bully in the schoolyard. He picks on everyone. You should never give in to blackmail. The more money we promise to pour into the US, the more they will demand from us.
EU citizens are equally scathing of the current US administration.
I think it's just right now a pause maybe before, I know, like maybe then Trump decides to impose tariffs again or to increase them on us. And plus right now with the Ukraine plan, again, like the recently disclosed Ukraine plan, is going to be other tensions as well.
If Vance is taking the place of Trump because he's talking about that now, I think it's even more dangerous. And in a way, even if they go back and they will be less rude in a few years, I think the tune is set, if we can say this in English. I think it's very dangerous. Yeah, I think so.
Government leaders are being accused of surrendering far too much ground to Trump on trade, leaving millions of already struggling EU businesses and households to shoulder the cost. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Italian prosecutors will have to decide whether to put the suspects, who today are between 65 and 80 years old, on trial. They are suspected of voluntary murder aggravated by cruelty and abject motives, a crime which has no statute of limitations and carries a maximum life sentence.
Some political analysts believe that the whole Sarajevo sniper tourism affair can also be read through the lens of geopolitics. They suspect that there are governments who are trying to link Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić to the so-called sniper safaris that took place in Bosnia in the 1990s.
The risk that this affair is turned into a political tool clearly exists. Some may be eager to find political implications in these murders, but they would be wrong. Those were just criminal acts.
I think it could well be politicized because the information that we have at the moment is very murky indeed, and no concrete details are being given as to what is actually being investigated. Neither the numbers, nor the people involved, nor the countries involved.
During the Rome press conference, Gavazzeni also pointed out that Italy's military intelligence agency was aware of the abominable trips when they took place, but nothing was done to stop them. Max Civili, Rome.
Next to the conscientious objector's commemorative stone, a demonstration rooted in conscience. Demonstrators, some from other parts of Europe, defying the elements and threats of arrest, holding placards that have become symbols of nonviolent action.
What people here are doing and what the widespread wave of civil disobedience that we've started with Defend Our Juries is against the prescription of Palestine Action. And that prescription, which is now being challenged in the High Court next week, is basically what we're arguing, that it is unjust, it's immoral, and it should have never happened. And it is really a breach of everyone's civil liberties. It is really an attack on democracy.
Before long come the arrests. Since these protests first began in the summer, British police have arrested more than 2,000, charging hundreds under terror laws in a move the demonstrators say is to stifle dissent against the UK's complicity in Israel's genocidal war on Palestinians.
They've attempted to use terrorism legislation to remove from all public discourse the one body of people in this country who, as citizens, have stood up and put their bodies on the line to materially interrupt an economic, military, and diplomatic collaboration in genocide.
Palestine action was prescribed by former Home Secretary Yvette Cooper in June this year. Membership of or support for the group is punishable by up to 14 years in prison.
The government is complicit in the genocide in Gaza, and they will do anything to criminalize any resistance against it, including old people sat with signs saying, "I oppose genocide."
In an unprecedented move in British history, Palestine Action is challenging its prescription in this court starting November 25th in the form of a judicial review.
If the High Court votes in favor of Palestine Action, the thousands of arrests and the hundreds of charges that were brought against demonstrators like these under the Terrorism Act of 2000 will also be quashed.
A victory for Palestine Action would also have repercussions for its jailed members, six of whom are now on an open-ended hunger strike in prisons across Britain. Cyprus is London.
Israel has struck a residential building in the heart of the Beirut suburbs. The third and fourth floors of a nine-story building were badly damaged, with debris filling the road, damaging cars and property. Deputy head of Hezbollah Political Bureau confirmed to Press TV that a senior commander was targeted in the strike.
This is an attempted assassination, targeting a key leader within the resistance. What matters now is that we document this as a clear act of aggression, an escalation we cannot and will not tolerate. It is our responsibility at the national level to establish a response that confronts Israel's attempt to undermine our sovereignty.
Although the Israeli statement said the target was a commander in the resistance, people near the scene say Israeli strikes are targeting everyone.
I am from this neighborhood. Every time they come up with this claim that they are targeting a member of the resistance, we are all members of the resistance. I want to tell our prime minister, who was a judge in the international court, if your diplomacy can't protect us and solve our crisis, then leave us to be and don't speak in our name. And this mechanism is obviously biased towards Israel.
Alice believes the Israeli claims that Hezbollah has rehabilitated is merely preparing the ground for a larger escalation and a U.S. green light for this aggression.
This marks a new level of violation, and there are two potential outcomes. Either the resistance retaliates, which would escalate into a full-scale war, or they absorb this blow, which could embolden Israel to carry out further strikes. Both options are devastating. This is a turning point. With Israel seeking to normalize its escalation in Lebanon, backed by U.S. support, and with the Lebanese government failing to take action.
President Joseph Aoun called on the international community to intervene firmly to stop Israeli attacks on the country. Lebanon, he said, reiterates its call to the international community to assume its responsibility and intervene firmly and seriously to stop the attacks on Lebanon and its people. The Israeli strike on the southern suburbs of Beirut and the U.S. blessing are considered part of the growing pressure by both sides to enforce full surrender by Hezbollah and full compliance of the Lebanese government to disarm the resistance. However, many believe that this opens the way for different scenarios, especially if the resistance decides it is time to retaliate. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
In September this year, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer announced his government's plans to introduce mandatory digital ID for all British citizens by 2029. The announcement sparked fury across the full spectrum of the British political landscape, uniting forces who would otherwise disagree on pretty much everything else. The digital ID's plans have led to continuous protests, with thousands braving wintry weather conditions in London on Saturday to express their opposition to the plans.
We're here to protest digital ID. We're also here to make the point to people that they're already being tracked, they're already being surveilled and controlled by systems beyond their knowledge or control. And this is just an extra step. And this is almost a way for the government to act like we're giving our consent for them to track us. But they're doing it anyway.
Today,
the main justification given by Starmer for the rollout of digital IDs is to help the government's crackdown on illegal migration, leading to suspicions that the so-called migrant crisis was allowed to develop to then justify these types of draconian measures in response.
A massive fear that many Brits have is that the digital ID plans, in combination with a rumoured ban on the use of cash in the future, portends the creation of a dystopian AI-powered control grid where every move you make is subject to surveillance and censorship by the state in real time.
These protesters believe that enough of the country is opposed to the digital ID rollout, but that for mass non-compliance to become a realistic prospect, unity across the political spectrum is a must.
Anybody organising anything can be controlled by this, so we want everyone to unite in common cause. As you say in our leaflet here, Palestine and freedom fighters, indeed everyone, unite in common cause.
The British state has long wanted to introduce digital IDs, going as far back as when Tony Blair floated the prospect when he was Prime Minister in the 2000s. But with mass opposition already forming and one of the most unpopular governments in recent history at the helm, opponents are quietly confident in their chances of defeating the entire idea altogether. Peace Academy, London.
Yemen's health minister Ali Shayban paints a stark picture of a health system suffocating under siege. Medicines are vanishing, chronic patients are deteriorating, children are dying before help can reach them. He called the shutdown of Sana'a International Airport a crime against humanity, especially after Israeli strikes destroyed its capacity, cutting off the only viable route for life-saving drugs. Families now face a brutal reality. No airport means no treatment, and no treatment means lives lost.
Today, we renew our call for the United Nations to operate flights and reopen Sana'a International Airport to save thousands of patients who urgently need to travel abroad for treatment. More than 250,000 patients require medical travel for serious and life-threatening conditions. Over 1,330 types of essential medicines, including immune therapies and other critical drugs, have not been allowed into the country due to the air blockade.
The ministry says thousands have been deprived of essential medications due to the air blockade. It warns that inaction would cause more deaths that can be simply prevented.
The continued closure of Sana'a International Airport clearly proves that the international humanitarian and health organizations that constantly preach about human rights are fully politicized and operate under American and Israeli influence. The clearest example is what is happening in Yemen, where thousands of people urgently need to travel for treatment but remain unable to do so as the airport remains closed to this moment.
Israel struck Sana'a International Airport in early May this year, damaging its runway, terminal, and several aircraft. The regime struck the facility again as Yemen continued its military operations against Israeli targets in response to its war on Gaza. Yemen's health ministry says the reopening of the airport, once a lifeline for the population, is an urgent humanitarian obligation, not a political convenience.
The health crisis continues to escalate as life-saving medicines remain blocked from entering the country. Officials warn that unless urgent steps are taken to restore medical access, thousands of vulnerable patients will face worsening conditions with no alternative options. Abdul Latif Loshali, Sana'a.
The streets of Tehran turning into rivers of remembrance. Coffins draped in flowers and the Iranian tricolor moving slowly from the main gate of Tehran University along major avenues towards the martyrs' memorial. Thousands lining the route, reciting prayers and chanting tributes for the fallen. The ceremony marking National Day of Unknown Soldiers honors fighters whose remains were recovered decades after the Iraqi imposed war. Their sacrifice, officials say, remains the backbone of Iran's security.
You should not think they have died. According to Islamic teaching, they are alive with God. We are here to let these unknown soldiers know we remember them and are grateful for their sacrifice.
Among the crowd are veterans, families of martyrs, school children, and young volunteers, generations connected through shared memory and devotion to their homeland.
They sacrificed their lives for our homeland. That is the ultimate act of faith and love for the nation.
The unity of the people is what the martyrs expect from us, not distraction or division.
We are just like their families. We are here for them. I lost my own family, all martyred in the war, so I feel like a sister, a mother, to these unknown martyrs.
While huge crowds escort 100 martyrs to their final resting place, even more have converged on Imam Hussein Square for a special ritual marking the martyrdom anniversary of Lady Fatima Zahra, the daughter of the Prophet of Islam. Here, massive cauldrons of samanu, a sweet paste made from wheat germ, are stirred in turn by volunteers. This is more than a religious ritual. It is an act that fosters empathy and solidarity.
Everyone you see here has come out of love for our beloved lady. So as you can see, honoring martyrs is rooted in our culture, a tradition that never fades.
Two scenes, one spirit. Iran's culture of remembrance, transforming grief into faith. From Samanu offerings in Imam Hussein Square to salutes before the coffins of the unknown soldiers.
As Iranians bid farewell to these unknown martyrs, the participants say the sacrifice of these fallen soldiers is the foundation of Iran's unity, resilience, and security. Yusuf Shahmadi, Tehran.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Mohammed Hassan Mudarrisi with you, and in this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the contents of Surah Al-Ankabut, or Chapter Spider, the 29th chapter of the Holy Quran. Dear brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 34th and 5th verses of Surah Ankabut, and we shall discuss them later on.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
إنا منزلون على أهل هذه القرية رجزا من السماء بما كانوا يفسقون.
Indeed, we will bring down on the people of this city punishment from the sky because they have been defiantly disobedient.
وَلَقَدْ تَرَكْنَا مِنْهَا آيَةً بَيِّنَةً لِقَوْمٍ يَعْقِلُونَ.
And we have certainly left of it a sign as clear evidence for a people who use reason.
So, after you listened to these two verses, and you were with us with the story of Prophet Lut and his people and those guests that they were actually the messenger angels from the Almighty Allah, in order that the fate of this polluted group of people might be made more clear in their mission, the Quran adds in this verse, إِنَّا مُنزِلُونَ عَلَىٰ أَهْلِ هَذِهِ الْقَرْيَةِ رِجْزًا مِنَ السَّمَاءِ. You know what the punishment of these people shall be? Inna munziluna ala ahli hadhihi al-qarya. Verily, we are bringing down upon the people of this town rijzan min as-sama, a punishment from the heaven. Bima kanu yafsuqun, for what they were transgressing. And then it says, walaqad tarakna minha ayatan bayyinatan liqaumin yaqilun. And certainly, we have left a clear sign of it for a people who have sense, which we will shortly refer to. Anyway, what we understand from these verses altogether is that the repetition of sin and persisting to its doing caused the descent of chastisement of Allah. And the acquaintance with the philosophy of history and being acquainted with past generations are regarded by the Quran. And that's why it says, وَلَقَدْ تَرَكْنَا مِنْهَا آيَةً بَيِّنَةً. Out of all these ups and downs, what you should get is those clear signs. Anyway, قرية, or town, إِنَّا مُنزِلُونَ عَلَىٰ أَهْلِ هَذِهِ الْقَرْيَةِ, is the قرية of Sodom, the cities and towns around it, of course, and the people of Lut were the ones who were who used to live in it. The population of them has been mentioned about 700,000 people, and that's not a actually small number. Anyway, the objective of the Arabic term rijz is punishment here. Its original meaning is anxiety. Rijz means anxiety. Then everything that causes anxiety is also called rijz. And that's why Arabs use it in a lot of senses, like harsh afflictions, plague, intensive snow and hail, even the temptation of Satan and divine punishment. Also, the Quranic sentence, بِمَا كَانُوا يَفْسُقُونَ, for what they were transgressing, states the cause of their painful punishment, that was transgression and disobedience from the command of Allah. And its application in future form of the verb is an indication to the continuation of their ugly deeds. That's an important point that we also need to notice. And this meaning, actually, shows this fact, that if those people stop the continuation of it, and if they return to the path of righteousness, path of piety and purity, they would not be involved in such a punishment, and their past sins would have been forgiven.
So, brothers and sisters, these messengers, angel messengers of the Almighty Allah, they said that inna muhliku ahli hadhihi al-qarya. They also said inna munziluna ala ahli hadhihi al-qarya rijzan min as-sama. They said that we are bringing down for sure upon the people of this town a punishment from heaven. Now, in this verse, the manner of their painful punishment has not been explained, and it only refers to the ruins of their afflicted and non-afflicted cities. And it says, وَلَقَدْ تَرَكْنَا مِنْهَا آيَةً بَيِّنَةً لِقَوْمٍ يَعْقِلُونَ. And certainly, we have left a clear sign of this for a people who have sense. But the explanation of their punishment is referred to in other verses of the Holy Quran, like chapter Hud, in different verses, implying that at first a kind of severe earthquake turned their cities upside down, and then a shower of stone rained on them in a way that their bodies and their ruined cities and castles were buried under it. Also, one noteworthy point is the application of the Quranic phrase ayatan bayyina, a clear sign. This could refer to the remaining of the city of Sodom, which, according to the verses of Quran, was located alongside the way of the caravans of the people of Medina and Mecca, and they could see it at the advent of Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, the Prophet of Islam, as Surah Hijr mentions. It is on a way yet remaining. And of course, there's also the mention of it in Surah Safat, where it says, verily you pass by their cities day by day, and by night will you not ponder. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Allah, 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 Ya Rabbi, Allah, Allah, Ya Rabbi, Allah, Allah, Allah. In the night they will stand and cry in hope and in fear. Nothing in the world
from the calm of surrender they find when they say,
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
This is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a televised address to the Iranian people on September 23rd, 2025. We run most of our power plants on gasoline and natural gas. This not only incurs high costs, but also pollutes the environment and the air. However, the electricity generated from enriched uranium and nuclear power plants produces zero pollution, costs significantly less, has a much longer operational life, and offers many other advantages that, as I mentioned, this is something that experts in the field should explain in more detail for the public. If we were to list the various uses of enriched uranium, it would make a long list. We didn't previously have this very important technology. We weren't capable of enrichment, and our enemies were unwilling to give it to us. No one else was willing to give it to us either. Over 30 years ago, a few determined managers and a few responsible, distinguished scientists, they were truly like this, started working on the issue of uranium enrichment and brought it to the point where it is today. Today, we are at an advanced level in terms of uranium enrichment. Of course, countries seeking to build nuclear weapons even increase enrichment up to 90% purity. Since we have no need for such weapons and we have no intention of building them, We haven't increased enrichment to that level. We have increased enrichment to 60%, which is a very high, excellent figure. And this is something that is necessary for some of the work that needs to be done in our country. We've been able to advance enrichment to this point, and we are now one of 10 countries in the world with this capability. I can tell you that out of the over 200 countries in the world, only 10 are capable of enrichment, and the Islamic Republic of Iran is one of them. The other 9 countries have nuclear bombs too, of course. We're the only one that doesn't have a nuclear bomb, and we won't have one. We have no intention of using nuclear weapons, but we do have enrichment. We are considered to be one of the 10 countries in this advanced industry. The scientists I mentioned laid the foundation for this work and made significant progress. But their most important contribution was training numerous individuals in this field. Today, according to a solid, reliable report given to us by those involved in this field, there are tens of distinguished scientists and professors, hundreds of students, and thousands of people who've been trained in the nuclear sciences working in various nuclear-related fields.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to all our listeners from around the world. You are tuned in to Iran Radio. I'm here in the studio of Iran Radio in Tehran, announcing our program schedule for the next hour. Hope you will accompany us into the early hours of this morning. We start tonight's lineup with Minbar. You can listen to speeches on many different subjects by very well-known Islamic scholars and orators. That will be followed by our radio productions feature. After that, we have Spring of Truth, which delves into a selection of the statements and speeches by the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, may Allah bless his soul. And we round up this hour's programs with our radio productions feature. Stay with us for the next hour.